Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we'll be reading a story called It's Been 5 Years Since I've Seen My Best Friends. I'm Being Forced to Update Them by Trashtia. I really hope you enjoy this story, and a huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. I really do appreciate it. I hope you enjoy. Let's get started. We need to talk, Ella. That was the first thing Alex ever said to me. 5 years ago via text before he cut me out of his life. Now he wasn't answering his damn phone. Hey, you reached Alex. I met Alex Locke in the 5th grade. I suffered from chronic headaches as a kid, and Alex lost time a lot, sometimes blanking out whole days. According to Alex, it was like being switched off. Due to his condition, the boy fell asleep a lot, sometimes tumbling down the stairs during his episodes, which meant he was always in the nurse's office with a head injury, or curled into a ball snoozing. I wasn't as sick as Alex, but I liked to sleep off my headaches in the nurse's office, and would wake to Alex playing Pokemon on the bed next to mine. Other times he would be sitting on the observation bed with his knees drawn to his chest. Alex wasn't a fan of shots. I discovered that when I was torn from a headache-induced sleep to his blood-curdling wails, I thought for sure he was dying, until I glimpsed the shot in Nurse Golding's hand. Initially, I wasn't surprised the kid was screaming. She was trying to stab the thing into the back of his head. Though, after reassuring me it was part of Alex's treatment, she calmly told me to distract the boy while she administered his daily shot. I panicked and attempted a puppet show with my hands. Alex was so confused by whatever I was trying to do, he stopped screaming, frowning at me like I had grown a second limb. It worked, kind of. Nurse Golding was ruffling his hair and calling him brave. When Alex's eyes widened, his hand going to the back of his head, he started wailing again, but this time I was pretty sure it was for attention. Alex definitely had his eyes on the tub of candy the nurse kept on their top shelf. Alex made me feel better about my headaches. I found his company comforting, and we became sick buddies. Sometimes his other friends would slip into the nurse's office to prod him and tease him, and I felt a little left out. The two of them paid no attention to me, focusing on annoying Alex. Growing up, we both got progressively better. Alex's episodes decreased to once a month, and my headaches were easier to tolerate. The two of us still ended up in the nurse's office, but for different reasons. I accidentally shoved a needle through my finger during arts and crafts and was too shocked to cry. Alex had fallen over during gym and had the tiniest scratch on his leg, which set off the waterworks. When Nurse Golding was trying to rip the needle out of my finger with tweezers, Alex was demanding she replaced his band-aid. Starting middle school, the two of us came face to face with Nurse Jane. She was terrifying, as well as completely incompetent. There was no candy in her office, and her solution to a girl in my class breaking her arm was, put a wet piece of tissue paper on it. Alex tried the I'm so sick thing, and Nurse Jane spent half an hour lecturing him about healthy food. He returned to class miraculously cured, looking paler than he did before visiting her. Neither of us dared enter Nurse Jane's office unless we were really sick. We were 10 when Alex threw a ball of paper at me, hitting me in the face. I was about to throw it back when the boy twisted around in his seat and motioned for me to unravel the paper. He had scribbled a funny picture of Nurse Jane being blown up into a balloon, underneath written in bright red crayon, "Do you want to play with us? Yes or no?" At first, I was hesitant. I told him I'd think about it, so he came straight to my house himself. I didn't even know he knew my address. "Why don't you want to play?" Alex asked through a mouthful of chocolate chip cookies. Mom had given him a plate to take up to my room. Hiding behind him were his two friends, Lucy Conrad, a curly-haired brunette with ribbons in her pigtails, and Kai Jacobs, the foreign exchange kid from Australia. The three of them already seemed like a tight-knit group in class, sending each other notes and giggling. I wasn't sure I wanted to be the odd one out in their little gang. Still though, Alex was insistent that I join them. So I did. The three invited me to the town's summer festival, and I had so much fun, I forgot why I was scared of ruining their friendship. Kai choked on his Coke float, which shouldn't have been funny, but it was his overreaction that sold me. The rest was history. Initially, I was kind of hesitant, only hanging out with them on select days, making sure not to be too invasive. Mom warned me that joining an already established friendship group was dangerous, on account of me potentially being left out. She had horror stories from her own teenagehood, where she was the fourth member in a group of girls who turned on her for their own entertainment, inviting her to slumber parties for the sole purpose of bullying her. But that wasn't what we were. Mom's warning scared me, and I waited for Alex to start teasing me about my big nose or my overly large front tooth. He didn't even notice my tooth until I told him, so he opened his mouth and prodded at his own molars, teasingly calling them horse teeth. Alex said he didn't care what I looked like. Eventually, the barriers I had built began to crumble, and I started to see these kids as real, proper friends. I was invited to play every day, the four of us venturing across town to swim in the lake or hunt for buried treasure with a map Kai definitely didn't print off of Google. Mom was wrong. I was never left out. If I didn't turn up to our secret spot in the forest, the three of them would walk straight through my front door. And when I was a little older, Alex grew brave, climbing through my bedroom window, dragging me out of bed himself. When I was sick with the flu, the three insisted on sitting with me, keeping a safe distance, and watching Disney movies with me all day. They all got sick too, so eventually, three crawled into bed with me. With my mom's words still haunting the back of my mind, part of me expected them to blow me off one day. In the summer before 7th grade, Kai invited me, along with the others, to his parents' house in Thailand. I think that is when it started to hit me. The four of us getting stupidly drunk and lying on the beach, exchanging ghost stories that weren't remotely scary, sending us into fits of hysteria. This wasn't whatever Mom talked about. I don't think Mom had friends. This was best friends. Entering teenagehood, we made that declaration on my 15th birthday, drinking milkshakes at the diner and trying to hide our tipsy giggles from the booze Kai had taken from his father's drinks cabinet. We went skinny dipping in the lake, and I had my first kiss. I went to summer camp, returning to town 3 weeks later, not to my mother, who had forgotten I was coming home, but to my three idiot friends who made me promise I would never leave for camp ever again. I wasn't planning on it. The other kids called me wobbly legs because I couldn't balance on the tree swing, and two campers were suspended for inappropriate behavior in the lake. Mom and Dad treated the others like their own children, each giving them a house key so Alex didn't have to brave tumbling through my window. He hit his head once, knocking the back of his skull on my new makeup table, and my mother almost had a panic attack. This didn't stop him, though. I think my best friend had grown accustomed to slipping through my window at midnight, armed with a flashlight and my favorite candy bars. I thought we were going to last forever, until we were old, reminiscing our childhoods under a late setting sun. But that wasn't the real world. Halfway through my senior year, I lost my parents to a 17-year-old drunk driver. Jason Chatham, who already went to juvie for intentionally running over a cat, was the mayor's son, so Jason got a reduced sentence and 4 weeks of community service. He gave me a bullcrap apology and was forced to beg for forgiveness, despite the guy smirking through the whole damn court trial. Jason was sent abroad to college, and my parents' funeral wasn't even an open casket. Apparently, there wasn't much left to bury. I couldn't even afford the damn funeral. It was the town that paid. I had no other relatives. There was just me, Mom, and Dad. Alex, Lucy, and Kai stayed by my side the whole time, but I barely talked to them. I was numb. My body felt detached and wrong, like it didn't exist. Time moved far too slowly. I was burying my parents, a shovel stuck in my clammy hands, and then it was pitch black and I was sitting in a random alleyway, my head spinning, halfway through a bottle of whiskey. It tasted like poison, but it also stopped me thinking for a while. Alex found me still in his funeral attire. I wasn't sure why he had his tie wrapped around his head, though. He didn't hug me or tell me it was going to be okay. Alex snatched the booze, took a long swig, and then threw it over his shoulder. I don't know why I found the sound of the bottle splintering on the ground so funny, but I burst into hysterical giggles that felt real and a relief. I didn't cry like I expected. I stood up, throwing out my arms to keep my balance. "You're a loser," I told him, trying not to slur my words. Alex nodded at my dress, lit up in the glow of a nearby streetlight. I realized my best friend's eyes were red from crying, his lip wobbling. The idiot was trying so hard to pretend we were okay, and failing miserably. His blondish-brown curls were sticking up everywhere. I could tell he had been running his hands through it. Alex was far too empathetic, sucking up my emotions. "And you're covered in barf." His voice was shaking, but Alex was still smiling. He held his hand out for me to grab, and I hesitated, just like when I was a little kid. But I needed him. I knew that, even in my unstable mind full of black and white, and a slowly spreading numbness threatening to swallow me whole. Mom and Dad were gone, and he was all I had. The town would go back to their day-to-day lives, and I would break apart. I considered following them in a brief episode of Psychosis. The only people who could pull my head from my fog were my friends. So, I grabbed Alex's hand, clinging onto him for dear life like I was going to lose him. I expected the whole, "I'm so sorry for your loss" crap. I've been suffocating in all day. But Alex talked about birds instead. I don't know why, and it's not like he was making any sense, trying to unsuccessfully name different kinds. But it was enough. Alex's stupid rant about birds distracted me from drowning myself in poison. He took me back to his place, ordered my favorite pizza, and pretended I didn't just lose my parents. Kai and Lucy joined us, and at first it was awkward and I was still drunk, still demanding he give me back my whiskey. Then, though, the night devolved into our usual antics, and for the first time since my parents' death, I was laughing. That night ended, however, and once the hysteria had died down and my hangover was gone, reality hit like a wave of ice water. The world bled into black and white, and not even pills could help, so I shut myself away. I finished my senior year with my diploma sitting in my mailbox with a letter from the school expressing how sorry they were for my loss. I tore it up, setting fire to the remnants. I was so sick of sorry. The word condolences didn't even sound real anymore. Leaving town seemed like the best idea for a fresh start. The night before I left, I crept through Alex's bedroom window. I did tell him and the others I needed space, drunkenly shouting at them to leave me alone when they found me sleeping in our old childhood treehouse. That night, I woke him up, wrapping my arms around him and thanking him for being my friend. Alex was half asleep, mumbling at me to join him, and I did, keeping a tight hold of him all night. It was supposed to be a goodbye. I wasn't planning on coming back to a town that had murdered my parents and protected their killer, but it's hard to say a real goodbye. When I left for college, Alex and the others promised they would text and call every day. Lucy expected daily updates, and Kai was obsessed with my roommate's secret hamster she was hiding under her bed. We stayed in touch, initially. I couldn't just let them go. I was planning on inviting them for drinks and having one last memory. I FaceTimed them during the campus tour, showing them my room and exploring the city. I was waiting to declare some kind of friendship-ending speech, but I guess moving away was a natural killer. I started ignoring calls, responding in one-word answers to their texts. 2 months into college, I had new friends, new experiences, and I wasn't the girl whose parents had died. Alex proposed in a long paragraph text that they come visit and stay in my room. I had to keep making excuses as to why it was a bad idea. Listen, I was the bad friend. I know that now. I don't blame them for being pissed, but ignoring me for 5 years was taking it too far. Presently, I'd called Alex a grand total of 35 times. He wasn't picking up the phone, and I was left to a robot voice telling me to leave a message, after Alex's voice from 5 years ago called me a donut. "Hey, you've reached Alex. Don't expect me to answer the phone. It's not 1993. Just text me." Which was ironic, considering my texts weren't being delivered. I had zero choice but to go down the boomer route. Initially, I knew that what I was going to say and how I was going to say it, but by the fifth attempt, my voice was shaking. "Hey, me again," I said through gritted teeth, kicking through leaves. "You probably didn't get my last, 34 calls because you're busy or whatever." I trailed off, clenching my phone tighter. "Anyway, How have you been? We're both adults now, but I figured we should maybe... talk? Maybe? Alex was surely ignoring me. Again, I didn't blame him. We were adults with our own lives. The problem was, I had zero idea what Alex had been doing the last 5 years because he was MIA. Alex's social media hadn't been updated in years, and I was pretty sure he just made new ones. The same went for Kai and Lucy. His last text, "We need to talk," didn't even make sense without a follow-up. And now, I was back home in a town I didn't want to be in, stuck in a dead-end job I hated, trying to pick up the splintered pieces. I was aware of my colleagues yelling my name and dropping my cigarette and stomping on the cinders. "I really need to talk to you." I didn't realize I was crying until I was swiping at my eyes. Sometimes life doesn't always work out the way you planned it. "I know it's been a while since you stopped texting me or whatever." I let out a choked cough. "Which is my fault, by the way." My chest was aching. "But I've actually come home." I tried to laugh, but it was more of a sob. "Yeah, it turns out New York wasn't really my scene." That was a lie, though Alex was probably used to me lying. Sometimes life doesn't work out. After graduating college, I was offered a job in New York, only for it all to fall through when depression hit. The world turned black and white, and I rotted in bed all day. I quit my part-time job, packed up my stuff, and came home. I'd been staying in the motel on the edge of town for a while, planning to move back into my parents' house. But knowing my friends were still in town, and intentionally ignoring me, I was taking my time. I wanted to hear his voice. 5 years was a long time. "I'm staying at my parents' old house, so maybe come see me sometime?" I blurted out, studying the sky above me. Cotton candy clouds we used to pretend to eat. "You still got the key my mom gave you, right?" It was unusually cold for April. I had to keep pulling my jacket around me. "Alex, I really, really miss you," I whispered. I wanted to tell him that I needed him, just like when I was 17, that he was the only thing keeping me afloat. I miss you, Kai and Lucy, so call me, okay?" I paused. "I know you're mad, but we can talk it out, all right? Just text me and I'll be there." "Eleanor," my colleague was grumbling behind me. "Your break is over." I tapped my screen impatiently. "I'm coming," I said. "Alex, I've got to go, all right? Call me when you get this." When the line went dead, I shoved my phone in my pocket and resumed selling coffee to dead-eyed customers. I recognized Mrs. Morris, the lady who lived opposite Mom and Dad. She offered me a smile, but her eyes were so sad. I could practically sense her knee-jerk reaction to say, "I'm sorry for your loss." I handed the woman her usual, a black coffee, trying to ignore the way she clasped her wrinkly hands around mine, squeezing for dear life. Maybe her husband died. "Have you seen Alex anywhere?" I asked, wiping down the counter. The woman's expression crumpled.
"I'm sorry? Who, dear?"
"Alex," I said. "Alex Locke, you used to give us candy when we were kids." Mrs. Morris inclined her head. There was something odd about her expression.
The Locks moved away a long time ago," she hummed. "I haven't seen them in years, Tweety Pie."
The nickname brought back memories. Mrs. Morris used to call me Tweety Pie. I nodded, pouring her a refill. "Is Alex still in town, though?"
"Hmm?"
"Alex," I said, growing slightly impatient. "Their son, Alex Locke." Her eyes darkened, suddenly hollow, like I was talking to a memory. She was looking straight through me like we were back at my parents' funeral. Mrs. Morris wore a rose in my mom's honor.
"I'm so sorry for your loss," she said softly. "It was terrible, so terrible what happened."
Her expression seemed to twitch, and a shiver creeped down my spine.
"God rest their beautiful souls."
I had grown accustomed to tuning out condolences. "Yes, I miss them," I said dismissively, leaning over the counter. "But have you seen Alex? What about Kai and Lucy? I've been in town for a while, but I can't get in touch with them." Instead of answering, the corners of her mouth curved into a small smile.
"You look so much like your mother, Eleanor."
"Thanks," I gave up, forcing a smile.
Eleanor?
Her face crumpled.
Such a bright young girl.
My stomach knotted. No, Mrs. Morris, you mean my mom. She blinked, sipping her coffee.
Oh, yes, yes, my condolences.
I got the same response from patrons I used to know. Townspeople blatantly ignoring my questions, throwing me a damn pity party for a loss I hadn't exactly gotten over. But over time, the pain was getting easier to deal with. Grief never leaves you, but time can force you to move forwards instead of dwelling on the past. Halfway through my shift, my colleague plonked a basket of flowers on the counter, where I was trying and failing to perfect a foam heart for a teenage girl who was definitely judging my art skills. The basket of flowers was full of roses, my mother's favorite. Alex planted them in her yard when we were 13, surprising her for her birthday. There was a little card attached to the flowers, and I ripped it off, my heart beating out of my chest. To my dismay, though, it wasn't Alex's handwriting, unless Alex had taken up calligraphy in his 5-year absence. Eleanor, I'm so happy to see you again in town. I hope you like the flowers. I know they were your sweet late mother's favorite. I have left a surprise for you inside your parents' house. It's not a lot, of course, but I want you to know you are never alone, sweetheart. I will always be here. Enjoy your surprise. You will never be alone again. With so much love and much needed hugs, a friend. Who sent this? I asked, rereading the note. To my confusion, there was a box of headache pills. I hadn't suffered from headaches since I was a kid, but it was when I was sliding my fingers over the box, a dull thrum pounded across the back of my skull. I trashed the pills, dumping the basket in my work locker. My colleague shrugged. I don't know, someone left it on one of the tables. So it wasn't a guy? I said, gingerly rubbing my forehead. He shrugged. I don't know what they looked like. I didn't even see anyone come in. That night, following the note's instructions, I returned home to an empty house. Letters for repossession piled on the floor. Broke down, somewhere between walking into the kitchen and seeing 5-year-old Milk sitting on the counter, and exploring my childhood room. The marks I scratched into the wall to track my high progress. It was so cold, so empty. Without Mom and Dad, there was no light. The house was just one dark memory, empty memory of what had been. Switching on the lights, I tried to make it at least a little homely. I ordered a pizza and ate it staring at my phone, waiting for a text from Alex. When my phone did vibrate, I almost jumped out of my skin. Just the Uber Eats guy requesting a tip, which I'm pretty sure wasn't allowed. I was unpacking in my room when a voice came from downstairs.
Ella! Holy crap, you didn't tell us you were coming home?
Alex. The crumpled pair of pants I had been folding slipped out of my hands. I felt like I couldn't breathe, stumbling downstairs. His voice sent pinpricks through me.
Alex?
The hallway was empty, a chill grazing my cheeks.
Ella? Ella, I'm so glad you're home. Don't ever go away again.
I froze.
Where are you?
I managed to get out.
We're down here.
The voice was coming from the basement. It was when I was slowly making my way downstairs, my phone vibrated with a text. I was reaching for it when it vibrated again and again and again, buzzing in my pocket. Pulling it out, I found myself staring at a multitude of text messages. May 7th, 2019. We need to talk, Ella. Did you get my last text? I've been feeling weird lately, like I did as a kid. I keep switching off, Ella. There's something wrong. I don't know what it is, but we need you here.
Ella, please?
The cops are brushing us off, but there's something going on. We need you here now. May 13th, 2019.
Can you call your local sheriff department? Anyone? Stop ignoring my calls.
May 16th, 2019.
Ella, you're killing me. Do you not care? Are you really going to abandon us?
Ella, are you there? I'm really cold.
It's dark.
It's so dark. I can't see. I don't understand what's happening. Please, can you come and help me? I'm so cold and it's dark and I can't. I need you to take me home, Ella. Please.
June 5th, 2020.
I like that you're so close to me. It's not cold when you're here. Shh, she's coming. Act natural, sit up straight. No, not like that. Like this. Wait, where did you go? Ella, where did you go? Ella, where did you go? Ella, where did you go? Ella? For a moment, I was hypnotized by the text, my hands trembling. Alex did send follow-up messages, but I never got them. Ella, we're waiting. Come on, we've missed you so much. Alex's voice should have made me happy, but I recognized it. Phantom bugs creeping down the exposed flesh of my arms and filling my mouth. Prom night, junior year. He was standing at the bottom of my stairs, wearing a suit and tie. Ella, we're waiting, was from that night. When my phone flashed again, I ignored it, forcing my legs to move down the stairs. My basement was exactly how I left it, a mess of boxes and my old bike. Except sitting in the corner were three figures drowned in shadow. There was a light, something illuminating the dim, but I was already stumbling over to my friends, who looked exactly the way I left them, frozen at 18 years old. Their skin was pale, papery thin and wrong.
There you are.
Alex lifted his head, half-lidded eyes finding mine.
Aren't you happy to see us?
His lips were barely moving. I glimpsed the start of decomposition melting into his face, eating away at his flesh, tiny holes where maggots had burrowed inside him. His hair was matted with old blood, where someone had tried and failed and then tried again to violently force a device inside his head, long orange wire sticking from his spine. I could see where he'd struggled, rusted handcuffs still coiled around his wrists, an unnatural light illuminating his iris. Something warm crept up my throat. The glow illuminating the room was emanating from his eyes. I could see straight through him, his body more of a science experiment, where his skull had been forced open, an electronic device woven inside the dead flesh of his brain. Whoever did this to him saw Alex as nothing more than arts and crafts, flesh and bone to cruelly mold. I was too numb to scream, my body stiff. He lifted his head, blinking at me like he was still alive.
Finally, he choked through a mouthful of oozing black. You're home.
I knew his voice, that had been cruelly stitched and knitted together. He greeted me when I came back from summer camp with the exact words.
Finally,
Alex had cried, wrapping his arms around me.
You're home.
I could hear where his words had been cut and sliced, glued to each other to sound like a coherent sentence.
I've been waiting for you.
The boy's lips stretched into a grin.
For you to see your big surprise.
Every word had been handpicked directly from his memories. I took slow steps back, tripping over something on the ground. MacBook. There was a sticky note attached. Here's another surprise. There's a USB wire on the floor somewhere, sweetie. I forgot to update them, so feel free. I hope you enjoy your surprise as much as I enjoyed making them. Feeling sick to my stomach, I switched the laptop on. The USB was across the room. I could see the end stained vivid scarlet. There were three folders. 2019, 2020, 2021. There was another separate folder. 2007. I clicked into it, a list of names coming up. I was loading into Alex's name when Lucy spoke.
What are you waiting for?
Her giggle was half human and half not, a crackle of laughter and static. I knew her voice, and it hurt. My 12th birthday, Lucy stood at the table in front of a giant chocolate cake.
What are you waiting for? She teased. Blow out your candles.
When she did lift her head, my best friend's face was bruised and battered. Kai's grinning lips were skeletal, his head split in two, held together with duct tape. The way he was slumped, swaying back and forth, his head of thick curls glued to his head, made me sick to my stomach.
Update us.
Kai's words had been ripped straight from years ago, when he yelled at me for annoying him to play Minecraft.
My computer is updating. Jeez, be patient.
Whoever did this to them made my friend suffer. I cupped Alex's cheeks and his skin was ice cold.
Who did this to you?
He responded with a smile.
I'm not telling you.
I remembered his tone from back in school. I begged him for answers to the chemistry test. It was like talking to not just a corpse, but the corpse of a memory too. I pulled out my phone to call the cops, but my phone flashed again. Unknown number. Update them. I can assure you if you don't, I will happily add you to my collection, Eleanor. This time I won't let you go. Check the second folder. They were watching me. I glimpsed a single red light blinking on the ceiling. Taking the laptop, I left my friends and called the cops. No, that's not how this is going to go. The voice was sugary sweet through my phone, intercepting the call. I recognized her. Nurse Golding from kindergarten. Update your friends, she told me in a shrill laugh. I made them very specially for you, Eleanor. I worked tirelessly every day and night to make sure you came back to your friends. She paused. You're not lonely anymore, are you? Of course, if you don't want to be grateful, I can always revert you back. I ended the call, throwing up everywhere. Somehow I found myself back in the basement, my breaths heavy. I planned to destroy the laptop and set fire to the house when something caught my eye. I didn't notice until I was fully looking at my friends. There were three of them, and four chairs against the wall. Four rusted handcuffs. I think I've been here before, but how? When? How can I not remember it? I keep thinking back to my childhood. Alex was losing time. Is that what happened to me? Since recounting this story, six townspeople have told me to update my friends. All of them are the older residents in the diner. I keep coming down here, but I just can't do it. I can't do this. The USB goes directly inside their heads, and how does this thing even work? Please help me. Can this be reversed? What did Alex's texts mean? I don't know what to do. And that's the end of this story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, consider subscribing and liking the video. If you don't want to do that though, well, there's a comment section that I would love to hear your feedback on. If you're on YouTube, of course, whatever options you have, I don't know if you're listening to the podcast. I'm sure there's something where you can reach out, but I'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to support the Midnight Podcast even more, there is a Patreon available. And if you'd like to come hang out with us in their fun little community, come join us on Discord. Links to all this stuff will be in the description of this video and podcast episode, so I do hope to see you there. And with all that said, if you'd like to send me your story, head over to storiesaftermidnight.com. I hope you enjoyed yourself here. Thank you for listening. I hope to see you in the next video.